Here we go, Joel.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. Where have we been? What have we been doing?
We've been doing a lot of corporate stuff.
Yes.
That's keeping us very busy.
Yeah, this tends to be a very busy season corporately. We did a whole series of podcasts on connection. And some of that has been evolving as we've been having conversations with people about it. Then I launched the connection group, which is giving me even more ideas and bringing up more things. But yes, we've been very busy with the corporate world. And it's interesting, some of the connection conversations are bleeding into that. And also, you've been running a certification course. And you have a new one that is starting next month, correct?
Yeah.
Yep. These are people who want to do the IEA accredited certification program to practically use the Enneagram. And then during this process, I've also been developing our corporate certificate so that people who want to use the Enneagram to take it into corporate teams can do that as well, because we want to see this tool permeate every area of life.
Yeah. And so, just as a qualifier for, we get this question, someone asked, well, if it's a team, but it's not in corporate, would that certification still help, that training? And of course it will. Absolutely. It's because it's about teams.
Yeah.
So whatever kind of team you have, if it's in schools or churches or other nonprofits, absolutely. It's all good. It'll all work.
Yeah, because the whole point of it is using the tool well. I feel like whenever people are asking me, like, what is the Enneagram, I'm always really struggling to come up with a definition of explaining. I'm like, well, it's, you know, there's other personality systems, but it's not really like that, because it's more about kind of where you're going. It's really more about growth. And so I find myself stumbling over something that needs to be experienced. But I feel like so much of it that we focus on is the use of it, not just the interest in it. Mm-hmm. And some people get primarily interested in the Enneagram because it has to do with, you know, how this affects me. Who am I? This has a lot of this like internal discovery system. You've told your story about it helping you process through burnout. But I think ultimately when we're talking about the practicality of using it, and I was literally driving this morning trying to write, I think I've written like 30 different definitions of like what this thing is. There's a video that I've pinned at the top of our Instagram that I talk about it. It's how we introduce it to corporate spaces. But when it comes to like the gamut of all of these different things, I'm calling it like a tool to increase integration by helping you direct your attention and energy. That in order to do that, you have to know your starting place, which is your Enneagram type, the default mechanism that is already directing your attention and your energy without your awareness. And so it's a tool to do this more intentionally. And what we've seen is when some of the corporate teams we've been working with, when they get this, we watch them relax, like kind of come into their own a bit more. So this has to do with even what we're talking about today with connecting with ourselves or connection with ourselves. But also immediately they start realizing where other people are coming from. And that's why it's such a powerful experience. But that being said, it's why there hasn't been some podcasts recently, because that's really taken up a lot of energy and time. And
yeah,
we also try to be good to our family.
We want to have a life. Yeah.
A life.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's been great. Connection is still very much the theme for this year for us.
Yeah.
And I think it is something that a lot of people are talking about these days because of the amount of loneliness that exists within, you know, within this country, within this world. And how do we get through that? How do we get past all of the factors that have caused this disconnection?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of them. There's just the fact that life is so busy for a lot of us. And so that gets in the way. We have social media. That gets in the way of connection. We have personal devices, games, smartphones, computers, all of that gets in the way of connection. And there's the political divide. There's religious divides, all of these things. So because of these structural divisions, you know, they don't help with connection. In some cases, they do, because this is a social group that gets together regularly. And that is important, and that does help. But connection, I find, is not something that is a state of being. It is a movement. We are either moving deeper into connection or we're moving away from connection. And so that's why we can have connection at one moment with somebody, be with that person for years, and then realize we're no longer deeply connected to them. It also happens to us personally. You know, we have moments of feeling really aware, connected to ourselves, and moments of not feeling really deeply connected to our own story, our own experience, sort of like going through life mechanically, you know, just checking off the boxes, doing what we have to do. So I thought we'd begin with that, the connection with the self and what that means. And immediately I think of people might hear that as like connection to the self feels very self-absorbed or self-centered, or it's a selfish act. Some of us are far more comfortable with thinking about connection to other people rather than connection to the self.
But when we lose connection with the true self, that is when we start showing up in false ways. That's when we start dropping the things that are keeping us connected to ourselves and others that have a positive impact on us. When we don't have good connection to ourselves, we can't really show up for others in the way that we want to.
Yeah.
So it impacts everything.
It does.
Just like with personality, when we talk about, you know, we were talking about working with teams, like you still have to understand the self in order to even understand how to then interact with others. So it has to be the starting point.
There's a fascinating thing I've heard others talk about way before, so I didn't come up with this, but that we are members of a society externally, right? But there's a sort of almost a society internally too. There's like the different versions of ourselves, right? And we have them. And in the Enneagram, we talk about the three centers of intelligence, your head, your heart, and your body. And we have conversations sometimes, and sometimes we have battles between the different centers. Whereas your heart wants something and your head says, no, you shouldn't want that. And your body's actually looking to physically move and do stuff, and you're just completely ignoring your body's needs or, you know, for proper diet, rest, exercise, that sort of thing. Yeah. So we're at conflict very much with our own selves, or there's even the stories of our past where we didn't like the way we showed up. And because we didn't like that thing, it brought us some measure of shame. What do we do with that story? Where does that go?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if you ask yourself, what are you doing with that story? Most of the time, we're ignoring it, justifying it, or we're punishing ourselves in some way for having been that person back then.
Explain more about what that means, that relationship, because this sounds a lot like the way you're relating to your own story, your own past. Yeah.
It's like there are versions of you from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
There's a version, let's just say a version of you from 10 years ago, that's different than the version that you are today.
Yeah. Have you heard Rob Bell's thing about that? I love his thing about when someone says, well, you said this or this. He's like, yeah, that was 13 Robs ago, or that was 11 Robs ago.
Yeah.
And I love that. So that's something that in our house we bring up a lot when certain things, you're like, yeah, well, that was 12 gyms ago.
Yeah.
Abby says that too. She's like, well, that was 4 Abbeys ago. You know, it's like there's these other versions of you that was doing their best at that time.
Yeah.
And the version of you now is not permanent.
Yeah.
I find both somewhat comforting and somewhat disorienting.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, sure.
Well, a buddy of mine said, he's a type 8, said, I don't think I've changed. I think I've been consistent. The way I am has always been the way I've been is still the same way I am. I'm not a person that, you know, flip-flops and changes and all that. And it was in the context of a larger conversation we're having that I'll leave out. And I asked him about that. I pressed him a little. I said, what does that mean? Like, exactly. Because you've not grown? Do you not think that you've grown at all? Oh, no, I've grown. Okay, so does that suggest change, or what does that suggest? Anyways, it was just a matter of wording and meaning behind
it,
right?
Yeah,
so we got through that, but it was, no, admitting, oh yeah, no, I've grown. It's not like he has changed to meet somebody else's expectations of who he should be. There's been growth, but growth within the consistency of his greater values and consistent with his character to some degree. We do have an essence. I mean, you can't change that, right? So it's like he'll always be an 8, just like someone else will always be a 6 or a 2. You can't change that part.
Right.
But you certainly can grow and transform and transcend even lower habits.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's the whole thing about that unintentional direction of your attention, what you think's important in order to feel safe, and your energy, like what you do about it, how you respond, how you react. Those things can be grown into. You can grow into different responses, different reactions. You can have more agency over how your attention is directed and not be on default mode all the time. But there's still a mechanism that is going to want to pull you, that's going to have those reactions. There are triggers. There are past histories that play into this. Like, so there's a consistency there, sure. When people say, oh, I'm the same. Yeah, some of those things are always going to be there. But how you respond to them, how you react to them, how much power they have over you, no, that changes a lot. It should.
Yeah.
Right?
So I think connection with self does mean looking at those different stories, those different parts of us, like our heads, heart, and body.
Yeah.
And to the degree that we are separated from those parts, meaning like you're ignoring it or repressing it, or you're justifying or excusing that person, you of 13, versions ago, or you're judging that person, you're punishing that person in some way. Right away, as I'm saying that, I think of people that I know who have done that and who are doing that to this day. Whenever they refer to that person back then, there's like anger. I will never be that person again, right? I will never do that again. Right?
Yeah.
So they're hating on that person. Now, that sounds morally good to say, I will never be that person. And there's a determination of like, I will fight against that. Yeah. But it comes from a reaction of anger towards that part of you. And whatever we're angry at, even though we may not do that specific behavior again, there's no real transformation of that story. It's just a sort of cutting that story out. And it feels like, well, that's okay. I've cut that out. But that's still a part of you, and you didn't transform that.
Mm.
And as a result, you'll watch that when you run into other people who are similar or somehow trigger that part of you, you'll watch as your own anger reemerges. And you'll be judgmental towards those people. You'll be harsh to them.
Yeah.
So whatever harshness we express to ourselves, whether it's, again, punishment or judgment, or we're justifying or excusing it, or we're ignoring or repressing, we will do all of those things to the people around us. Because how we treat the society internally is how we treat the society externally.
Ooh, say that line again. That's good.
How we treat our own society, the society inside of us, is the way we're going to treat the society outside of us.
Yeah.
So if I don't learn how to care for my body, you think I'm going to actually know how to care for the bodies of other people? If I don't pay attention to my own heart and care for my own heart needs, how am I going to do with other people? That's the thing that has shaken me sometimes out of my own, like, wow. I don't even know how to take care of this other person's heart.
Yeah.
And in many ways, it's because I'm not taking care of mine.
Yeah. And it's such an evolving process. I remember hearing a psychologist talk about how we fear in the brain and creativity cannot coexist at the same time.
That's right. Yeah.
So the mechanism can't do both. And it's the same thing with like acceptance and judgment. You can't have acceptance and judgment for yourself and then acceptance of another who's struggling at the same time. We want to be able to make judgment calls, right? Mm-hmm. So there's an aspect of that we'll get into on one of the other podcasts. We want to say, like, this is a better way to be. But there's a value there that's good. It's just that when it gets clouded by judgment, it's very hard to actually go to this other very true and valuable thing of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, if we can't do it internally. Yeah.
Okay. So, but here's a question that one client asked me. It's like, fine, if I do that, then what motivation will I have to change? Because acceptance does not feel like motivation to change. Love does not feel like a motivation to change. Like, if I just simply accept, then I won't change.
How we're defining acceptance then? Because the way I'm hearing that acceptance sounds like acquiescence. It's just kind of like, well, this is the way it is, and I just have to be fine with that. I don't look at that as acceptance. I look at that as cheap acceptance, as acquiescence, as kind of like a giving up. Acceptance is an acknowledgement of the reality that is, not a permanence of what will be.
Okay. So if that's acceptance of what is, how do you do that on a practical basis when you have these stories that are profoundly painful and parts of us that we don't really want to interact with, or not, maybe not even painful, just simply like, I don't want to think about my body. I don't want to, you know, I'm in rebellion against taking care of myself, or don't want to really feel internally these emotions. So I'm kind of moving on. I'm ignoring them.
Well, I mean, I can definitely speak to the body one because it was something that I didn't give very much attention to through my 20s and 30s. Like earlier on, I did in my life, and I enjoyed certain kinds of physical exertion, martial arts, things like that. But when I went through my health crisis in my early 20s, I shut down to my reactions to my body because I was so afraid of something bad happening. Even with some of the things that did happen, they said could have been created by some of the weightlifting and things like that. So I had this real like pulled back energy. And so I got less mobile, I got heavier. All of these things existed. So I exiled that part of myself, as as I've heard you say. I just divorced myself from that reality and I just ignored my body. But whenever I got sick or whatever like this, it would just bring up all this emotional angst, this fear of being put in the, back into incapacitation, this anger that I'm not able to do the things that I need to be able to do. And so I would be both physically distraught and emotionally distraught, and I wasn't taking care of myself, then I'd be more likely to even be susceptible to some of the things that were going on. And I was also in like in this church setting where I would like suddenly get an email or call about so-and-so was in the hospital and please pray for them for this or that. And then I would have this thought go through my head, was just kind of like, well, yeah, they had like decades of not taking care of themselves at all. And now it's just like, we're only being aware of this because we're in the hospital. And so I would like lose some of my compassion and I would get frustration then at them too. And then that would sometimes get me going to go do something. But anyway, I would go back and forth through this whole battle internally. And it wasn't till I was in my late 30s that I was just going, okay, I need some kind of a rhythm. I need something that is doable for me to reintegrate my body. But if it's actually true to me, then it's going to be enjoyable as well. Because I really realized that for me, when it comes to exercise, if it's not enjoyable, it's not sustainable.
Yep.
But now doing things that I love, I'm in the best health I've been in my adult life. Like I'm healthier now than I was at 25. Mobility, strength, cardio, all of it is much better. But the crazy thing is how much I've noticed it's had an impact on me emotionally. I didn't expect it to have such a profound effect on what I now realize are the other centers. I didn't realize how much it would clear up some of my emotional distraught because I was more regulated. I was more able to ride the waves. I was more able to handle some of that and just had more clarity mentally. I wouldn't get stuck in the same kind of loops because if I'm going out and moving my body and that thing is on my mind, there's something that has to do with moving the body, that having more agency over what's going on in your mind and in your heart. I think it developed more integration overall in a way that I would not have discovered if I would have tried to just sit still or talk to somebody about it even.
Yeah, that's right. Because if you talk to somebody, it might be helpful, but it's not the actual act of loving and accepting yourself, your different parts. So when you did what you did with your body, you were welcoming it back and accepting the story, accepting the reality of what is.
And acceptance of like, well, this is my starting point.
Yeah.
And I can't go do this.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to do that, which means I have to take these little micro steps.
Right.
And it took me a long way to get here. So it's going to be a long road out. I can't expect this to happen overnight.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a big part of it as well.
Yeah. I think integration, we always use that word. It's the acceptance. It's the welcoming back. It's loving these different parts. I know that can be, again, a little scary to some people when they think about how do I not repeat those mistakes? How do I not experience those same painful experiences from when I was younger? Things done to you. Not only things you did, but things done to you as well.
So are you saying that there is a fear of having more acceptance, of the self, because there's the fear that I'll then become someone I no longer want to be again.
I'm sure that's a big part of it for some. And for some, I think it's the judgment or the punishment is what keeps them moving away from that person they were. Mm. The stories of painful events that took place, not something you did, but something that was done to you.
Yeah.
If you accept it, you feel victimized by it. If you show love to that little part of yourself who was in that situation, it doesn't feel very maybe empowering.
It
can feel like, no, you gotta toughen up. You gotta push through this so that this never happens again. Right? Because if you were tougher, it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't have happened to begin with. If you were more protected, more guarded, more aware, more defensive, more whatever, you may not have been able, or you may have, you know, not had that happen to you. Or if you weren't so whatever it was, maybe you felt like you were too innocent, too sweet, too kind. That's why you got taken advantage of. So you develop an edge. You develop a guardedness against that part of yourself. That feels more empowering. Like, that gives me control.
Because if I were to have more acceptance around this, if I could release it more, demonstrate forgiveness even in things that happened to me, if there is a disempowering thing that can crop up, because does that mean I'm saying that these things are okay?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm allowing this, but I'm letting the person off the hook who did this thing.
Yeah. And again, like, that's not, to me, that's not acceptance. It's like, it's not, it's an acknowledgement of what is. It acknowledges this is where we are right now, but it's not saying acceptance over a trauma that's happened to me is not saying that the trauma was okay.
Right.
So I don't know if that's like a semantics thing or a words thing or a perception of thing, or if that's an emotional or very logical emotional reaction, that if I have more acceptance, that I'm somehow being more permissive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and it is difficult because I'm struggling even in this moment of like, because I know that I don't mean that.
Right.
And yet it sure sounds that way when we say acceptance. And I do think that that's the earlier stage of life. You do need to fight that thing. You do need to have a reaction, a resistance, a protection that you put up. You need all of those things.
Good point.
But I think at some point you begin to go back to those parts and you look at them differently, I think. I think you see them with love. You see them with grace. You see them with compassion. And when you do, there's something that transforms. It changes the shape of it. The pain is still there. All the story is still there. But you can actually look at it. It's interesting. You can look at it, but it does not have the same negative effect it once did on you. And now I think at that point, that's where the creative mind, as you were describing, kicks in and you see differently. You can start to move in love and compassion towards the world while still, this is not acquiescence.
Right.
You can be even stronger, I think, in some regards of like, this should never happen to another person. This is wrong. That part was, you can still do all of that, but there's an acceptance and a harmonization of all of that internally for you that heals these different parts that have been broken. And you're no longer in reaction, I think, to the world or to yourself. You are now in a place of moving forward in a truly transformative way. And that's, I know, difficult for some to understand perhaps what we're saying here. But the experience of it is the thing that I'm trying to put words to that is real.
So I'm going to narratives and stories and all of these things in my head, because some of the examples we're giving are short term. But I sometimes like examples from movies or books because you have a longer story arc that's compressed, right? And what is one of the classic things you see? You see the young hero who has to overcome some incredible odds, either internally or externally, something they have to confront within themselves because of their own story and their own history and their own family, or there's something they have to externally take on, like another warrior. And there's so many of these stories where you have like the young warrior becomes the like peaceful, old, wise, almost monkish kind of character who's very zen because he's been the warrior. He doesn't stay the warrior. Yeah. Like, but he still accepts that that's a part of his story, who he had to be. And you even, I just thinking about this because we just had the UFC 300. And whenever you watch like the build up to fights and the guys are like talking smack about each other. And a lot of that, of course, is promotional.
Yeah, sure.
You know, trying to promote the fight, get people to watch it. But they act like they really hate each other, and they'll like have the face off, you know, so that's just this really tense moment where they're like staring each other in the eyes and like talking, whatever. You know, they get all riled up and they just go in, they're like wail on each other. It's like this very aggressive kind of thing. But what is it happens at the end? Always.
Oh, yeah.
They're like hugging each other, like saying things. They're holding each other's arms up. They're like, they're doing things that just kind of like, oh, we've now been through the war together. We've gotten it out. And I heard a commentator it's just kind of like, if there was a lot of pent up aggression towards each other, that's usually you've burned through that the first 2 minutes of the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so the remaining 12 minutes or 13 minutes, if you're doing three rounds, that's all just down to like technique and skill. It's like all of that stuff gets burned away. And I think that's the whole process. It's not that all of those energies before didn't exist, but when you actually get in there and the grit and you do the work internally, you kind of burn through some of the aggression you've had towards yourself, towards others. It's not that it disappears, but it just doesn't seem as big. And I was just watching a thing, the therapist using some psychedelics now in therapy to try and help people process things. And they found that in some of these circumstances, it's not that people look at the situation and it didn't happen, but it doesn't seem as dominant in their consciousness anymore. It's a part of them, but it's not running the show. It's not like, it's not taking up their whole field of view. It's like they see it still out of the corner of their eye. They know it's had an impact on them and formed them, but it's not, you know, coloring everything they do and see.
Yeah. Well, you fight the different fights when we're younger. It's like fighting the self, fighting others.
Yeah.
But if you don't stop, you will always be looking for something to fight. You will always be looking for that enemy externally or internally. But coming to a place of demonstrating love, which is what I practice now, is looking at these past experiences and practicing love. And when I do that, I'm practicing love primarily for myself in that space, whether I was a victim in that situation or something I did. And practicing that love for that part of myself, that version of myself back then, does lower the intensity and starts to bring about more of a relaxed kind of sense around who I am. And I think that that's what the process is that eventually starts to harmonize these different stories into a whole. And you can't make it happen, but you can demonstrate love. And as you demonstrate love, transformation begins to take place. The fear that people have of like, well, if I show love to that part of myself, will I continue to be a victim of my circumstances, a victim and victimized is my greatest fear. Or will I not be compelled to change if I was the one who did something to harm somebody?
Yeah, that's the harder one for me. And I think that there may be people who it's harder for them to process or overcome the things that have happened to them.
Yeah.
And I get that. That's true for a lot of people. Like, but that one's easier for me. And I even notice when I'm most shut down, I pull away from people is when I'm in a place where I'm having a really hard time connecting with the self. And so I pull away from others because I'm afraid I'm going to be toxic. I'm going to cause damage. And those are the things that are the hardest for me to overcome. Mm-hmm, and I don't know if that's true for everyone, but I know for me, it's the things that I do when I'm at my worst that are the hardest to integrate.
Yeah.
And it doesn't show up for me like shame. Like I know for some people it does. Like for me, it shows up like anger.
Yeah.
You should have known better. What the hell's wrong with you? Or, you know, just, hey, if you're feeling like that, just get away, withdraw. And then it's like, there's a whole other thing there we won't go into right now. I think that for some of us, we lean one way and some of us lean a bit more the other.
Yeah. Yeah, and we will have those reactions, different ones. Shame, you know, repression, anger. So when that happens, that's normal. It's not like, oh, I shouldn't. No, no, that's part of the process you go through. But the problem isn't the problem isn't that we get angry or we try to repress the story or we feel shame. That's not the problem. The problem is we get stuck there.
Yeah.
And the movement of it is towards loving that person, loving yourself. So you look at yourself as a person, like I'm loving that version of me that showed up in that situation. And it's like imagining yourself and you're looking at yourself and you're having that conversation with yourself and you're saying, it's okay. I love you as you are in that situation. Not I love you despite it. I love it. No, I love you in it with all of that. So all of that ugliness, all of that pain, all of the things that have happened to you, I love you in that moment. Mm. And so you hold all that, the ugliness, the shame, all of it, and you hold it with love. And what that allows us to do, and this is where it gets to this question of, well, will it continue to put me in a place of being victimized again? Will it put me in a place of, maybe it takes away the motivation for change? It doesn't either. What love does is it allows transformation to actually take place. Not a change of behavior, but transformation. And then the behaviors are different. The mistake that we make is that behaviors have to change. That's what transformation is. And we try. But what we're doing is we're having a reaction to something. And as long as the reaction is, I'm doing one of three things. I'm ignoring the fact that it took place or repressing it. I'm judging or punishing that person. Whatever reaction we're having, as long as we're doing that, we're not in the place of acceptance and love. And we're exiling that part of ourselves. We're shaming that part of ourselves. We're doing whatever it is that we can. And that's going to continue to live on inside of us. And it'll live on in the ways we treat other people as a result of that. But when we love those parts, it allows the transformation to take place. That then we see differently. We think differently. We feel differently. And of course, we behave differently. That's the more organic process, I think. Then we find ourselves treating other people in the ways we've treated ourselves. If we showed love to those parts, we're going to show love to those people. Yeah. So again, we heal the society within. We also heal the society without.
So thanks for listening and continuing to be on this journey with us. If you're interested in either one of these certification programs we mentioned at the beginning, you can find out more at theartofgrowth.org. And there's three podcasts in this mini-series. So make sure you are subscribed as they come out here over the next several days. And if you want to reach out to us or you have questions, you can do that at theartofgrowth.org as well. And if you are a Massachusetts-based company, there is a grant where you can work with us for your company, for your team, that is being changed in July, but is still available now. So if you are a Massachusetts-based company and you're interested in that, reach out to us at theartofgrowth.org. But for now, my friends, may you lean into the connection with self as a starting point of awareness to develop deeper connection with those around you and a deeper connection with where you are headed, where you want to go, the person you want to continue to create. Grace and growth, my friends.